Hello, and welcome to another episode of As I See It, an Umpire Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Joe Sweeney. I'm an IHSA baseball and softball official in the state of Illinois, and I am also now an IHSAA baseball official in the state of Indiana. On this episode, we're going to do things just a little bit different. I'm going to have on one segment, and that segment is an interview with a gentleman by the name of Patrick Farber. I first found Patrick on YouTube when just looking up things about high school baseball, and Patrick has a YouTube channel called Umpire Classroom. He also has a podcast, a new podcast. You should check it out if you're checking out this one. I believe his is really good as well. Patrick is the founder of Umpire Classroom, and he works with GHSA Baseball and Umpire Development. And GHSA is Georgia's state high school athletic association, and he's kind of the rules guy, and he'll tell you he does the rules quiz in his state. I've been following Patrick for several years now on YouTube, and he also has a website, umpireclassroom.com, where you can actually sign up for a course. And there's a link in the episode description for a $5 off his course. I'm doing the course right now. I'm in the middle of it. I'm towards the end of it. And it is such a comprehensive course. It really takes you from never umpiring a game in your life to being prepared to do your first game. It's really comprehensive and it's really good. So I encourage you that if you're an umpire, it doesn't matter which stage of your career that you're in, I guarantee that you'll learn something from him. I know many people who use Patrick's material, and even my association in the state of Indiana, we get a rules of the day, a play of the day from my association. And a lot of times when they give you the scenario, there's a link to a video, or sometimes there's a link to a video and it's Patrick's video. So I'm kind of geeking out watching this because I've watched him for so long, and Patrick takes you through his career and a lot about what he does. So without further ado, let's get into the interview. All right, today on the podcast, on this segment, we have a special guest with us, Patrick Farber. Patrick Farber has a YouTube channel, and his YouTube channel is called Umpire Classroom, and he also has a podcast, and we want to welcome him to the show. Patrick, we appreciate you being here with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Joe.
So you've been doing some videos on YouTube for quite a while. Why don't you, if you don't mind, go ahead and tell us maybe how you got into umpiring, and a little bit about your journey, where you're at now, maybe where you've been, and just kind of fill us in.
Yeah, so I'm 29 years old. I started umpiring 15 years ago when I was 14. Actually, just, you know, I was up at my local park taking batting practice with Dad, and one of the umpires that knew us came by and said, "Hey, we're about to do training. You should come join us." Went to the training, thought I'd have a good high school job, and kept doing it after high school. In college, I took a semester off towards the end of my junior year to go down to Wendelstedt when I turned 21. Did that the first year in 2016. Went to the Northwoods Collegiate League, or Northwoods Collegiate Summer League after that. And then went back to Wendelstedt in 2017. Went to the Coastal Plains League, followed by ending up in professional baseball. Did professional baseball for two seasons. So my first year I was in the Arizona League, which is at all the spring training complexes out in the Phoenix area. Absolutely miserable, by the way. Just the temperatures were awful.
I bet.
But did that for my first year in 2017. 2018, came back, was originally assigned the Gulf Coast League, did one game there before getting called up to the Pioneer League. Flew out to the Pioneer League, and that was where my second season really took place. And it was about a little closer to maybe three quarters of the way through that season. I had a pretty bad concussion up in Montana that ended up ending my season and ultimately my career. After that, took a while, but we got recovered, came back home, got into a career job, which was not the end of the world, but wanted to keep involved in officiating. Yeah. Got involved with Georgia High School Association, actually started with football in 2019, then started baseball in 2020. You know, I've been going since then.
I have a couple questions. Like, when did you start in high school ball?
So I started actually officiating Georgia high school baseball when I came back in 2020. Okay. So prior to that, I did a lot of travel stuff, but I didn't really have the time to put into being a high school umpire on top of everything else that was going on. It wasn't until after my days in pro ball that I was able to put more time into becoming, you know, high school certified.
So in your professional career, so what level was that you got the concussion at?
That was A ball.
Okay. You know, it's kind of interesting because I've talked about on the podcast, I went to a couple of camps and, you know, there were three guys there that had done professional ball. And the most recent one was back because he had gotten two concussions. Is that kind of where people end a lot is just maybe injury. And then the guys that continue to go on are fortunate enough. They just, you know, avoided those kind of, you know, freak things. You know, you can't control a foul ball. I'm assuming it's a foul ball.
Yeah, it wasn't even a foul ball. It was just a catcher absolutely missing a upper 90s, close to 100-mile-an-hour pitch. But I wouldn't say that's exclusively why those people get there. I mean, there's to get from AAA to the pros, you have to be extremely talented as an umpire.
Yeah,
there's certainly an aspect that if you get concussions and the more of them you get, the less likely it is you are to make it to pro ball because,
right,
you know, if you get your first concussion, the next one's supposed to be easier to get and kind of spirals from there.
Sure.
It would also, I'd imagine, and I'm not involved with MILB decision making, but I'm sure it has to do as well with, you know, just where are you as a prospect in their umpire development. I was a good umpire, but I certainly wasn't necessarily the top of my class when I got into minor league baseball. If you're a bubble candidate and some things aren't going your way, it probably just doesn't work out. But like I said, not the end of the world. And honestly, I was 23 when my career came to an end. Honestly, I think I was very fortunate that it ended at 23 and not 33.
Sure.
Still left me with plenty of time to get into a career outside of officiating, not lose out on that time. But also, I think I've developed into a significantly better umpire, honestly, since my time in professional baseball. It just comes with age, seeing more games, getting a better understanding of teaching the mechanics. I like to think if I was an umpire in professional baseball now, I'd be better than I was then. But that's okay. Just try to take that energy to whatever game I'm working, be it collegiate summer leagues or high school baseball.
So from there, when you came back, you went into GHSA, which Patrick is from Georgia. So I assume that's Georgia High School
Association. Yeah, Georgia High School Association.
Yeah. So did you get involved with them? You say you got involved with football and then you got into the baseball side in 2020. Did you go right into evaluating, or what was your role with them? Did it kind of turn into, you know, umpire classroom from there? Is that even affiliated, or how's that all work out?
I knew in 2020 I was going to join Marietta Umpires. That's the larger group here. That's where I live.
Okay.
And my original plan was just to kind of go under the radar and see if I could join and not tell people about my background, but just because nobody wants to be the guy that's big leaguing people when they walk into something. I was working A ball. That doesn't really make me a big league guy by any means. So I thought I'd go to the first camp that we do for GHSA. There was a local one that I could go to. And my original plan was that I was just going to try to blend in with the numbers. But one of the people there recognized me and actually asked me to help lead one of the sessions because they were short a host. From there, just slowly started getting more and more involved, especially as I got to meet more of the leadership at the state level. And we had been putting something together that was pretty unique around that time that we've kept up with, which is GHSA Umpire Development, which was started by the leader of umpiring for GHSA. His name is Michael Bates, and he's a Marietta Association guy, as well as Jay Pierce from minor league baseball, had been heavily involved in it as well before his passing.
Okay, so from there, once you joined baseball, so is your main role now evaluating umpires?
My main role in umpire development is rules training and instruction.
Okay.
Which is where part of the inspiration for umpire classroom came from. So I took over that. I'm responsible for writing our rules exam every year that we use, which a lot of the umpire classroom viewers will recognize all the questions because they're pretty much last year's umpire classroom questions. Yeah. Which the reason I do it that way is that instead of it being trivial questions by just giving people questions out of context and with no real teaching behind them, it's just they don't learn as much that way. So instead, we give out a study guide, which I know this varies from state to state. Here in Georgia, the study guide we give people is the exact same questions as the exam. But now when I give them the study guide, I can give them that with links to the umpire classroom videos. I so see. That the questions aren't just trivial answers. They can actually get an explanation of why is this the answer. There's a lot of correct answers that you would only know by going through the case book.
Yeah. Yeah.
The rules book does leave out a lot of gray space that, you know, in professional baseball, they give the umpires a manual each season that covers those various rules points.
Right.
We don't have that in high school baseball. We've got to really understand the case book, which is why it's so important that umpires learn how to navigate the case book. It's critical. And one of my favorite publications that the FHS puts out is actually the Rules by Topic. So I'd highly encourage that for anybody to check it out if they're trying to really learn the rules, because that combines the rules and the case plays into the same areas. So you can find them all a lot more easily. That said, I did speak to the NFHS a couple of weeks ago, and they informed me they were no longer going to be publishing it.
Yeah.
So I've got one of the coveted 2023 copies still with me. And
yeah.
I guess I'm going to have to take manual notes from here.
So when you evaluate umpires, what do you look for first?
So I tell umpires when I'm evaluating them, I'm going to evaluate them to two different standards.
Okay.
I'm going to evaluate them to the standard of what's the next level for them in terms of their development and that is reasonable for them to reach. But also I am going to give them the standards of a minor league evaluation.
Okay.
And what it would look like if they were doing everything by the book. Obviously, we need umpires and we'll gladly work with umpires of any age, be it 23 or 75.
Yeah.
And if you're 75, you're probably not going to do the physical mechanics that a 23-year-old can do. So I'll give you the notes of what they might do, what a 23-year-old might do on the field, kind of change the evaluation to really focus on what's their next level of advancement. The reason I think it's important to give that minor league level is that a lot of guys don't get some of the instruction that I give them until they've gotten it from someone who was actually in professional baseball.
Right.
If they're only getting training from high school umpires, they're not learning a lot of the advanced mechanics that you would learn working in professional baseball or even not working in professional baseball, but just going to Wendelstedt. And a lot of them, it's surprising how many guys I'll evaluate that have been doing it for 10, 15, 20 years, and I'll tell them something and they've never heard of it before.
Yeah.
And you tell it to them and they say, oh, that makes sense. I could easily do that. They've just never been told that.
Sure. Sure. And I'm encountering that too. You know, the unfortunate thing in my area is that we don't have a whole lot of training. You know, we'll have a clinic, like everybody does the required clinic. It's really important for umpires to understand, like, doing what you're doing, you know, and taking that extra step to improve your game. Cause I think it just makes the game better and it makes it a whole lot easier for yourself. So, I mean, I really appreciate that, you know, you say those things and that you work with your guys like that.
Yeah. Doing it right it's an art and it takes a lot of effort and a lot of hustle. The reason I do high school baseball is that I appreciate that it's one, maybe two games in a day.
Yep.
Which means that when I'm out there on the field, I can put all my energy into having one really great game. And that means, you know, doing it by the book, hustling, getting into the positions I need to be in, shading the working area in the infield, all of that, which I understand that guys that work four games or six games on a day for a perfect game or whatever travel tournament they're doing, they obviously can't put in that same level of effort because they got divided across a much longer period of time. But that causes people to develop a lot of bad habits, especially if they start doing travel ball early in their career.
I can see that.
And then you can definitely, you have to teach them that when we're working a single game as part of a championship season, so like a high school season, then you got to be able to put, you got to be able to turn it on more for those games than you do for your generic 13U travel ball game, right?
Yeah, I agree with that. Focus is a big thing, and if that's all you've got to focus on, yeah, I agree, it's pretty important. I have found that in my experience, you know, I live in Illinois and I officiate in Illinois, and I've started in Indiana. Like the process to get started in both states was pretty different. Can you explain a little bit about how it happens in Georgia? I'm just curious.
Yeah. So in Georgia, they can reach out either to the DHSA or just their local umpire association and get in contact with one of the high school groups. From there, those groups should have a recruiting director. I can't speak for all of them, but for Marietta umpires, we have a recruiting director. And as soon as somebody reaches out to them, we try to get them on a field somewhere. And that's so important for any association to focus on, is that we have to keep up the momentum to becoming an umpire.
Right.
If you say, hey, we've already done our training for the year, come back next year, you'll never see them again. So instead, we got to do what we can to quickly get them on a field, be it a high school field or just a youth baseball field. So for us, what that looks like is they reach out, our recruiting director gets their information, does kind of takes a phone call with them to talk more about it, explain more about how umpiring works. And then from there, the first step we get for them is we have them go through Umpire 101 on Umpire Classroom. The reason being, it doesn't necessarily replace on-field training, but Umpire 101 Classroom is designed that it covers all the basics they need to go out and work a freshman game that day. Everything from how to be an independent contractor, how to schedule and work, how does pay work, to basic crew of two mechanics, basic rules. It's a quick way to get them onto the field, which is so important for a lot of our associations to have something to do that. If you're telling people to come back in 3 months or 6 months for training, they won't do that. Sure. Versus we're able to basically, in the time it takes from somebody to say they're interested to getting their uniform ordered and delivered, we can get them on a field as soon as they got their uniform because they're able to at least do that basic training. For the GHSA part of that, once they're with Marietta umpires, they can work anything sub-varsity. Okay. We can still register them. To work varsity ball, they have to take the GHSA rules exam every year, as well as the rules clinic. And then to work GHSA playoffs, they have to attend a in-person camp every year.
Well, I just love how you get involved with them and get them going like as soon as humanly possible.
And there's nothing more frustrating because I signed for a local park here. And there's nothing more frustrating than my first year with it. We put together a great training session in January and February of 2020. And in the preseason to the rec league season starting, did all our umpire training. It was thorough. It was in depth. And then what happens as soon as the first game start, people drive by the park, see people on the fields, and reach out asking how do they become an umpire.
Yeah.
And at the time, I had to tell them, well, you just missed all our training, and it's unrealistic that I could do training every Saturday for the rest of my life. But with something like Umpire Classroom, and that's why I developed it, was that then we get them through that, get them the basics, and then I can at least get together with them. I can set up every couple of months a four-hour clinic where we do field mechanics and plate work.
And I can say I love that kind of training and involvement and keeping them going. I just got a couple more, and then I want to talk a little bit about Umpire Classroom. So tell me a little bit, and I want to kind of tap into your experiences. Like, so what is, for you, like, what is one of those rules that is misunderstood by the most people in your experiences?
Well, the runner's lane is always fun.
Yeah.
But you don't really have to call runner's lane too much. We all know the plays that happen in the MLB, and we all see those.
Sure.
It doesn't come up too often. One of the things I focus on with a lot of high school umpires that they don't understand is mechanics around things that aren't plays developing. I'm talking about national anthem or mound visits. Simple things that are never taught, so we never do them correctly, that I'm trying to change. You know, for the national anthem, it's in a crew of two, played umpire behind the right-handed batter's box, base umpire left-handed. And it's disturbing how many umpires I see doing this for 10, 15, 20 years, and they will stand wherever.
Yeah.
If you picture it, they've stood there before, and you know that's an easy one. And that doesn't impact necessarily gameplay. It does show in professionalism, but it doesn't impact gameplay. One that is more important is actually, what do we do during a mound visit?
Yeah.
And this is taught at Wendelstedt, but that's obviously 5 weeks, very in-depth, doing it every day. Versus if you only have a couple hours to train people, you wouldn't go over this. But what's taught at pro school is that if the coach is coming out of the third base dugout, then we're going to go up the first base line.
I see.
And the inverse if it's the other way.
Right.
And there's a lot of reasons for that that actually make sense the more you think about it. When you go up that way, first of all, if you are going up there to break up the mound visit, you'll come up pretty much opposite of the coach.
Right.
So that he can see you coming before you get there.
Yeah.
Also, if the coach is going to say something bad to you, everyone's going to know they do it if they have to yell from the mound across towards the foul line.
Yeah.
Versus if they're walking next to you.
Yeah.
They might say something under their breath. And then if you're ejecting after that, it's going to make you look like the aggressor. And
that was a nuance that, you know, I forgot, because you talk about in your video about how to kind of record the mound visit, you know, and that's something I've really incorporated. But the other aspect, you know, and I would have to go back and watch, and I'm glad you reminded me of it, was to walk up the opposite foul line. And that makes a lot of sense. Those are kind of things that people don't really know about, but now that they, you know, if they hear you talk about it here on Umpire Classroom, you know, they'll understand what's going on there. And I think there's a lot of good information in there with the whys, you know, with the coach and all that kind of the interaction.
Yeah. And I cover a lot of rules going through our traditional weekly videos on Umpire Classroom, but that's something that happens a lot more frequently than some of the rules I bring up. Now, I will say, though, this year we did cover intentionally drop balls.
Uh-huh.
And 3 weeks after that, I had an intentionally drop ball in my game. So I was very happy to see it actually come to use in one of my own games. One of the weird rules I went over.
Right. Well, in that same vein, you know, my whole podcast has been about all these new experiences that I have on the field. Like, you know, everybody knows safe out at first base. You know, those are the common things. But the whole point of it was like, this is a new thing that happened to me. And I'm still experiencing those. And my question to you is, do you still encounter the odd play where there's a head scratcher and you've really got to dig back into your memory or with your partner about something that happened on a field and how to adjudicate that rule?
I still experience plays that I haven't experienced before. They'll still pop up every now and then. But as you get more experienced at umpiring, and the longer you do this, and the higher the level you do it at, and the higher the standard you hold yourself to, the more in-depth your post-games will be, regardless of who you're working with or if there was or wasn't anything super crazy. Yeah. When I go on the field with college guys or guys that went to pro school, we'll have a post-game for like 30 minutes in our car, 30 minutes plus, just talking about different plays that happened in our game or maybe plays that happened in games prior. But we break all that down and we review all the small parts of it,
sure,
which includes talking about what did I like seeing that they did? What do I think I could do better? And always talking about what am I working on the next game? It's easy to lose that drive over a longer period of time, especially, you know, if you're working four games every day and doing just a ton of them. You know, I don't necessarily do this for the money. Not saying I wouldn't do it without the money. You know, I do this because I love umpiring and I like the, you know, professionalism that goes behind it and the art that it is. And so as long as you have that drive after any game, you'll have plenty to dissect in a post game, be it new and exciting plays or just routine plays that you think you could have done better.
And I see what you're talking about. You know, I can think back to past games where, you know, I have had 30 minutes of post game. And like in yesterday, you know, I had three games yesterday and it wasn't, you know, 5 minutes, my partner was gone. You know, I tried to talk to him about some things and, maybe he had somewhere had to be, but I see how that is important. And I see how a guy can grow from that and really focus on, you know, the back and forth from your partner. Like I'm constantly asking my partners, hey, what do you see different that I can do? Or what do you want to see me do different? You know, if I'm working with you, pretty good stuff. I want to give you a chance to talk a little bit about Umpire Classroom and tell listeners how they can get directed there and maybe what they can expect to see when they go to Umpire Classroom.
Yeah. So Umpire Classroom, you know, started with the YouTube channel. The idea being we needed a quick way to get rules instruction out to umpires across the state. In my role with umpire development as rules trainer, you need to have something that's engaging, that's quick, that can reach all our umpires. You know, in-person training is not realistic for everyone in a state like Georgia. And in a metro Atlanta area where it's going to take you 3 hours to drive somewhere after work, it's not realistic that we can all get together in one spot for training. Sure. So by doing it virtually, we can reach a lot more umpires and make it fit into their lives a lot better. Now, you could do that through something like a Zoom, but Zoom tends to have people lose their interest in it. You've got connection issues. There's a lot that goes wrong when trying to hold meetings by Zoom. By doing videos recorded, I'm able to keep them shorter, keep them more focused, keep them more engaging.
Yeah.
You don't get any annoying stump the ump questions that delay it for everybody else.
Right.
And so it started with that, finding YouTube as a way to distribute that information as widely as possible. Growing from there, we've done it now for four seasons maybe. But starting in 2023, I had the idea to set up our Umpire 101 course.
Right.
Which again goes back to running my own association. How do we develop a training program for new umpires that gets them from knowing nothing to at least someone that can eat up freshman games or JV games for your association as quickly as possible? It's done pretty well with that. We've had associations that have adopted it so far, and it's really not very pricey as well, because we usually list at $35 a student, and that's usually paid for by the student. Some associations pay for it for their members or reimburse them, but very attainable, which I think is important because people need to be able to bring it into their association. But by having it as something that the student usually signs up for, then the associations aren't being asked to spend, you know, $700 up front that they don't
right.
have.
Yeah, I think this is something that I'm going to share with my Indiana Association lead. I know some, you know, younger guys that are just getting started that would definitely benefit. But why don't you tell us how we can get directed there?
Yeah, so first, for anyone that has an association that's interested in reviewing the course, very easy for me to send out free trials left and right. So shoot me an email, patrick@umpireclassroom.com. Just let me know about your association. For listeners here, though, that don't have an association, and Joe, I'll send you a link after our chat
okay.
for them to sign up at a discounted price.
Okay.
And then they can take it themselves if they'd like to.
Yeah, that sounds great. I'd really appreciate that.
There will be a code, but I don't have the code in front of me, but
yeah.
I'll have a code for the discount.
Yeah. As well. That'll work. And I'll go ahead and post that in the show notes. Patrick, I really appreciate you coming on with us today. I appreciate you chatting with us. And, you know, I know we had a little bit of conversation before this. It was good to talk with you. Good to meet with you. You know, I'll be honest. I was kind of geeking out this week knowing that I was going to talk to you because I've been watching you for, you know, 2-3 years now on YouTube. And, you know, it's kind of like meeting a celebrity for me. My wife now, she's probably rolling her eyes, but anyway, I appreciate you jumping on here, and thanks a lot, and good luck to you, and hopefully this was very helpful for people listening.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and thanks for doing this. I mean, the more we talk about umpiring, the more people get interested, and for a lot of our umpires, especially I know up north, there's a lot of guys working games solo. I think podcasts are the best way for us to make them feel like they have a partner on the field with them.
Yeah,
that's, at least someone they can talk about the game, you know, talk about their games to, or at least hear someone talk about their games. And certainly for anyone that listens to this, feel free to send an email my way if you have any questions. I cover those as much as I can in the podcast I've been putting out as well, just daily questions. So try to be a partner to those people, because I can't imagine starting this job solo.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I appreciate it, Patrick. Thank you.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, you have a good one, Joe.
All right. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Well, there you have it. Another episode in the books. We appreciate you listening. Hope you found the interview very interesting. And I encourage you to follow the link in the description. It gives you $5 off his course. The course is not very expensive. It's only $30. And I'm telling you, that is a bargain for all the material that you get. So give us a like and follow us on wherever you find your favorite podcast. And as always, I want to leave you with a scripture verse. This would be John 14:6. Jesus answered, "I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." So we're glad that you listen, and we'll see you next time.